Good morning. My name is George Anthony Long, and I'm the counsel for Alice Dela Cruz, who challenges the grant of summary judgment to Andrew Santos, Santiago Tudela, and Tom Palacios. In this case, Alice's claim against Santos was for familial association based on the fatal shooting of her son, Donald. Her claim against Mr. Palacios has to do with his interference with her interest or rights to the body of her deceased son, Donald. And her claim against Mr. Tudela was for the training of Santos, but that claim is derivative to the action against Mr. Santos, to Officer Santos. Now, in granting summary judgment to Santos, the court utilized the incorrect legal standard. Instead of utilizing the standard applied to a 14th Amendment substantive deprivation due process, it used the standard applicable to the Fourth Amendment, which is not the circumstance here, because the plaintiff is Ms. Dela Cruz, who is the mother of the deceased Donald.
Therefore, isn't the 14th Amendment standard even a tougher burden for you?
Well, it is a tougher burden on the sliding scale. However, if the court considers all of the evidence that Alice presented in the light most favorable to her as required under the law, then we believe that the record establishes that there are genuine issues of material fact for that will warrant a resolution by a trier of fact in this case. And to that extent, we feel that the court improperly refused to consider the declaration of Alice's expert, Claudio Nerita, that was submitted in this case. The court basically excluded or refused to consider the declaration, which we read to be purely on basis of credibility. The court basically was saying, well, we don't think his declaration is credible, therefore it will not be considered. But that is not the standard on summary judgment. A credibility determination is never made. That is for the trier of fact. Now, according to the record, Officer Santos stated that he's the only living witness to this shooting. Interrogatory number 9 to Santos from Alice asked Santos to identify all persons known to him who witnessed or saw the shooting. Santos responded that he does not know of any witnesses to the shooting. And that's on page 50 of the excerpts of record.
So he should have said, other than myself.
Right, other than myself, right. Or other than the deceased, okay. So basically what we have is that Santos is acknowledging that he's the only living witness to the shooting. Now, the district court in Menjivar versus Los Angeles, which was cited in the moving paper in the opening brief, cites this court's opinion in Scoff versus Hendrick. There, this circuit stated that cases of a fatal shooting poses a problem, particularly where the shooting officer is the sole surviving eyewitness. The court cautioned that the district court or the trial court should not place great reliance on the self-serving statement of the shooting officer. It says the judge must carefully examine all the evidence in the record, such as medical reports, contemporaneous statements by the officers, and the available physical evidence, as well as any expert testimony proffered by the plaintiff to determine whether the officer's story is internally consistent and consistent with other known facts. In other words, the court may not simply accept what may be a self-serving account by the police officer.
Officer Santos was called to the scene because of a domestic dispute, is that right?
Well, Officer Santos...
Domestic altercation of some kind?
He went to the scene because of some domestic altercation. The record shows that actually was another officer that was taking the call, but that officer didn't know where the scene was. But Officer Santos said he knew. So he went to meet the officer to take him to the scene, because Officer Santos said that he's been to that scene about 20 to 25 times, at least, because of domestic violence or violence of some sort.
When he got there, Mrs. Cruz's son was beating a man with a 2x4?
Well, according to the Officer Santos, he stated that when he arrived, he looked around and he saw Donald, who was standing over a person on the ground, one Officer Santos, with a 2x4 in his hand. That is what Officer Santos said that he saw. And Officer Santos then stated he told Donald to stop it. He then says he told Donald to, after he said stop it, according to him, Donald stopped and turned around, looked at Officer Santos, swore at him. Then Officer Santos said that Donald cocked the 2x4 as if he was going to swing at him. Now the circumstances, according to Officer Santos, he was 10 to 15 feet away.
One of the reasons I asked about this kind of a preliminary question was the individual who was on the ground.
Yes.
Who was that?
The individual on the ground, according to the record, his name, I have to pull up his name, I'm sorry.
That's not important.
Rangamar, excuse me, I think his name was Rangamar.
Okay.
Ernest Rangamar.
Did Rangamar see anything?
There's no indication of a statement by, I believe from Rangamar, of what he saw concerning the shooting. My understanding is that Rangamar, I'd have to go back through the record, but I don't see where Rangamar made a statement as to what he recalled. Because when the medical records of Rangamar, which was in the, which is submitted in the excerpt of record show, but he had a blood alcohol of 0.221 at the time. And the doctor stated that although he was conscious, he was not very, I guess, was not very alert and didn't really recall what the incident was.
But so who are the witnesses then, other than Narita, that would support your version of events?
Well, Narita actually would admit, Narita was not a witness. He is an expert witness.
Okay. He is a potential witness.
He's a potential witness, correct.
So what evidence is there other than Narita?
Other than Narita, we submit that there's some evidence, such as there's the statement of an officer Diaz, who said that when he arrived, that when Officer Santos arrived at the scene, he had his weapon drawn when he exited the police car. According to Narita, the expert, that's indicative of a predisposition to use the weapon. Now,
hadn't he been told that somebody was trying to break into a house?
He had heard that there was a disturbance. At one time, I think he said that he had heard that there may have been a knife involved or something of that nature.
The police received a call that a man with a knife was trying to break into a house.
That may have been of something along those natures. That's correct. But when he arrived at the scene, instead of assessing what the circumstances was, what the circumstances were at the scene, he exited with his gun drawn.
Is there any other, again, then you tie that back to Narita's opinion, any other evidence or witnesses that would support your inferences or vision of what happened?
I would say, except for some of the facts that Narita relies on, that would be the only, what I would say, other evidence or witnesses that would support Narita's conclusion, such as the police officer was there who took the measurements of the shell casings. Now, Narita looked at that, and he opined, based on that examination, that Officer Santos was moving forward. So basically what we have is neutral evidence, and then it's what's the how that's interpreted.
But he was excluded. I mean, it seems the district court does have discretion to exclude an evidence based on the nature of the testimony, the criteria, the qualifications. Isn't that within the district court's purview?
If there's an issue on qualifications, but that's not the basis the district court excluded at all. The district court excluded it basically on credibility because, it was different from the other facts. It was different from the facts of other people who claimed that they were there or the statements of other people.
Well, if there's no foundation because it's not based on the facts, that are there, isn't that a basis for excluding an expert opinion?
Well, but the fact problem is that here, that his facts were based, that his determination opinions were based on facts. They were based on, he stated what he, the documents and the evidence that he reviewed in reaching his opinion. He reviewed all of the documents that were provided to him in discovery, including the police measurements and the statements of Officer Santos. He did all these things. So his foundation is there. So that was not a basis for excluding Narita's expert opinion. Because the fact that, oh, his opinion is different from what other facts say of police officers, that's not a basis on summary judgment for discarding an expert's opinion. Because if that was the case, it would be very difficult, particularly in fatal shootings, to ever establish what really transpired. Because then you're left with dealing with the self-serving statement of the officer.
But counsel, did the judge have before the court the declarations of the other witnesses who gave statements?
It had before the declaration of Officer Santos,
Declaration.
I'm not sure if it had a declaration from Rangamar.
There are witness statements that are in the record.
Yeah, they were witness statements, but they were not under oath. All right, they were witness statements that were taken by the police, prepared by the police, or written up by the police, or done at the direction of police, but not under oath. Those were sort of what plaintiffs relied on. And now, looking at time, I'd like to move to the claim that we have against also Palacios based on the interference with the right to of accessing the body, Donald's body.
What's the clearly established right?
The clearly established right is that in the Newman case, the circuit held that if state law grants a next of kin an interest or right in the body of a deceased, then that is sufficient to satisfy a property interest for 1983 purposes. Here we have the section 868 of the restatement, which is the law of the Commonwealth, which vests an interest and right in the next of kin in the body. And here, there was no lawful or valid regulation or authority that justified Palacios denying Dela Cruz access to the body, at least even viewing.
But doesn't the restatement again refer back to the local law?
Well, in the Commonwealth, there's a statute that says that if...
Answer my question.
Oh, excuse me.
Doesn't the restatement refer to local law on the subject?
The restatement refers to local law to the extent as who are the people or who are the persons that may have the property right or property interest.
I thought the comments to Section 868 say that the designation of the right of disposition is created by individual state law. And so whatever the state law provides vis-a-vis disposition of the body governs.
That is correct, Your Honor. But here what we have is that in the Commonwealth, the statute states that if the Commonwealth has not passed a statute, then you look to the restatement, and that is the governing law.
And but if you have a right to the body, a Fifth Amendment right, or some kind of property right, but you're asking for immediate access and viewing, yours goes a little bit further, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't.
Well, they say, look, we're in the middle of a huge criminal situation. We're not saying you can't eventually view and take the body, but not now. So what's the constitutional right that's violated?
Well, basically, within the 868, even the comment, it states that it reaches if it is improperly dealing with the body or prevents its proper burial. Now, here, even the regulations that Palacios
purports... Does the body get to be buried?
Eventually, yes. However, you must take into consideration, when you say proper burial, you must take into consideration the cultural aspects. And as Dela Cruz stated in her declaration, that under their culture, that the family has to be with the body at times, and leading up to even to the burial. So in that instance, that was a deprivation.
Okay, now, well, you can think about how that's a constitutional deprivation maybe on your rebuttal because you're out of time.
All right, thank you very much.
Shall we hear it first for Mr. Santos and then Mr. Lakabe? We'll hear from you following that.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Brennick J. Huseman of Fisher Huseman. I represent the police officers in this matter, Officer Santos and Police Commissioner Tudela. My colleague, Mr. Lakabe, represents Director Palacios, the director of the hospital, and I'd like to reserve 7 minutes of our argument time for his presentations.
All right.
As this Court knows, this case is before it on a grant of summary judgment in my client's favor. The Court found that Officer Santos acted reasonably. Ms. De La Cruz has brought two issues to this Court's attention on appeal. The first issue is whether or not the correct standard was used, and the second issue is whether or not the affidavit of Mr. Narita was properly excluded by the Court.
Can you help me a little bit with the record? There were, in fact, some eyewitnesses.
Yes, there were, Your Honor. There were four eyewitnesses, I believe.
Just looking for a yes.
Okay, yes.
I have some questions to follow.
Sure.
So there were eyewitnesses.
Yes, there were.
Some were family members of the person who was hit with the 2x4.
Yes, Your Honor.
Some were other people who lived in the compound.
I believe it's the Rangamar family compound. I think they're all in some way or another related.
Okay. Some of them heard Officer Santos identify himself as a police officer?
Yes, Your Honor.
And he was in uniform?
Yes, he was.
Other witnesses heard Santos warn the son about advancing to stop doing what he was doing, that is beating the victim of the assault, is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And warned him multiple times about approaching him?
Yes, Your Honor.
Then how can a interrogatory be answered saying there were no witnesses?
The interrogatory was answered two ways.
Is it wrong? Is it inaccurate?
I believe the yes and no. I believe the interrogatory was inaccurate in totality. In other words, there were extra eyewitnesses, but to my client's knowledge at the time he filled out the interrogatory, he was not involved in any of the investigations. Okay, and so he wasn't aware of the statements that were taken.
Okay. Now, in resolving summary judgment in your client's favor, did the court rely upon witness statements as opposed to affidavits?
The court relied on the witness statements that were taken contemporaneously on the scene at the accident.
So the answer to my question is yes.
Yes.
Was that appropriate?
I believe it was. There were no hearsay objections to these witness statements. They were they're exempted from the hearsay because they're contemporaneous business records of the Department of Public Safety. I believe that they passed the hearsay test. They weren't objected to at the district court level. So
the affidavit that the plaintiffs proposed was someone potentially expert in the use of deadly force by law enforcement?
The affidavit that was excluded was from Clyde Narita, and we don't dispute that he is an expert in DPS procedures and at running DPS. We do dispute, and we did object to, and we include that in the supplemental excerpts of record, I believe 1 through 6, are objections to his specific affidavit. He's not a forensics expert. If you look at the actual affidavit that Mr. Narita submitted, there isn't any evidence attached to it. Mr. Narita says that he relied on all the documents that were turned over as part of discovery, but then the documents that he's relying on to buttress his case are not attached. So it's in the briefing, and it was said today on oral argument, that the shell casing report, well, that's not in front of the court. The shell casing report isn't included. It wasn't included to the district court. There's no measurements. We have no idea where those shells were and how they were displayed. It's just an affidavit that says, well, I think he was moving forward.
The difficulty is that if you read that, I think it's a footnote in the district court's opinion, it's almost like he's not saying he's not a qualified expert. He's just saying, I don't believe him. I mean, it sounds like, as counsel said, that it's a credibility attack on Officer or Mr. Narita.
I would concede that the court could come to that conclusion. I would submit, however, that the footnote on page 8 of the excerpt of record says that the affidavit fails for all reasons cited by defendants in their opposition. And on the excerpts of record 1 through 6, we objected several times on the basis of reliability. We don't believe the expert was reliable. And the reason we don't believe the expert was reliable is, again, the expert testified as to forensic evidence. The expert is not a forensic expert. That falls outside of the expertise. The other problems with the expert's affidavit is this is actually just an affidavit that contradicts facts. It doesn't state its methodology. There are no scientific papers attached to it. It's not a scientific paper. There's no methodology described in how there was an arrival at his conclusions. It's completely unclear from its face. Additionally, I've said this, there's no support offered for the contradiction of the eyewitness accounts. There are, I believe, 4 eyewitness accounts if you exclude Officer Santos. And the Ernie Ragamar, the individual who was being beaten by Mr. Sewell, the only reason that's a partial eyewitness account, I would call, he gives a statement, and that is included in the excerpts. I believe that begins on excerpt record 147. He gives a partial account of what happened, but at some point his beating became so severe that he passed out. But there are 3 other individuals who all witnessed the event, all said the same thing, that Officer Santos arrived at the scene, told Mr. Sewell to stop on 3 distinct occasions. Mr. Sewell refused, and they all stated that he attacked Mr. Sewell. And so I understand why the Ninth Circuit has said that, you know, you don't want to take the self-serving testimony of a police officer, but you don't have to take the self-serving testimony of a police officer in this case. He agrees with every eyewitness to the event that Mr. Sewell was not only attacking him at the time he was shot, but had just ceased his beating of Mr. Sewell. And there's also testimony in the, or not testimony, but the eyewitness statements indicate that it was Mr. Sewell's intent to kill some of these individuals. And so we would, in conclusion, I would ask that this court affirm the district court's decision. We don't believe the standard is an issue. Ms. Dela Cruz is asking for a higher standard applied to the same facts. There will not be a different outcome. And I will reserve absent any questions, I'll reserve the remainder of our time to Mr. Lockerbie.
All right, Mr. Lockerbie.
Good morning, honorable judges. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you.
Thank you. He had a qualified immunity case, of course. At the in order to bring that successfully bring such a case, the government official must have violated clearly established constitutional or statutory rights of which a reasonable person would have known. In this case, plaintiff has alleged that she had a property right in the body of Donald Sewell is sufficient to support a 1983 claim. The property right, of course, must come from state law. Mr. Long explained that we have a statute in the Commonwealth that says that we have adopted the common law of the United States, basically. This stems from old trust territory days when there was no law in the Commonwealth. We've adopted the restatement, the common law of the United States, as expressed in the restatements, and if not so expressed, then as commonly understood and applied in the United States of America. Well, restatement, restatement of torts second, section 868, contains a, is a cause of action for interference with a dead body, and basically gives a the next of kin who has the right of disposition of the body. Those are the only words that, that go to anything that might be considered a property interest. The right of disposition of the body, a cause of action for withholding, mutilating, operating on, basically just interfering interfering with the, with the body, and the only function that could have been interfered with here would be the function of burial, because it was the only right granted. The only right granted, it's the last sentence. A person who has, I do believe it mentions next kin, or the person who has the right to disposition of the body. That's the only property right granted. Now, it is true that in the Newman case, the Ninth Circuit, in a case in which there was lots and lots and lots of dead body law, the state of California, found that there was a property right granted, which was granted by statute, granted by the cornea removal statute, which in that case involved the removal of corneas from a dead body by the coroner of Los Angeles. The statute that authorized this said that the coroner may remove the corneas of a deceased individual if he was not aware of any objection. But there was no requirement, there was no specific requirement in the statute that he ask, that he seek permission from anyone to see if there was an objection. And so he didn't do this, and not being aware of any objection, he went ahead and removed the corneas. And that panel of the court then held that that because he should have made himself that this grant of veto power basically to a family member by objecting created a constitutionally protected interest, and that the failure of the court or the failure of the coroner to inquire as to whether there was any objection then became a denial of due process. There should have been a hearing, in other words, before the corneas were removed. So that is not applicable to our case. We're not interpreting any kind of statute. There is no law in the Commonwealth interpreting in any way the interference with dead body statutes. Now, we did have the one case which Mr. Long and I tried, the Cepeda case, in which there was a body that was in a chiller in the morgue. There's only one morgue in the Commonwealth, and that's the Commonwealth Health Center. There was a body that was in a chiller. The compressor on the chiller broke over a weekend. Nobody knew about it for a couple of days until I came back to work on Monday. The body was badly decomposed by that time, and a cause of action was brought under Restatement of Torts, Section 868. It had nothing to do with Section 1983, of course. It was not a 1983 action, and the extent of the property right was never an issue. The eight children bought the action, and they all had an equal right to disposition of the body. So there was never any question about it. Even assuming, I don't want to get stuck on property right. I don't think there's one there, but But even assuming that there were, say you reviewed the law of the CMI and found there was a property right, it would still have to be clearly established. And as that restatement section in that one case is the only case there is, and the case is not in point to what we're talking about, then not only was it not clearly established, but there is no law. If you want to know if there's a property right in the CNMI as alleged, that extends to the extent that plaintiff is seeking in this case, then really the only prudent thing to do would be to send a certified question to the Supreme Court there and ask them to answer it. Absent that, there simply is no law. So a person in Mr. Palacios's position, he's the head of maintenance of the hospital, basically. The morgue falls under his supervision more or less as a mechanical thing. We have regulations that dealt with, well, there's a statute that deals with autopsy requests in the case of violent deaths. An autopsy or medical deaths. An autopsy can be requested by either the Attorney General or the Secretary of Public Health if a person dies under circumstances where there might be some communicable disease or something. We need to know about that.
Mr. Lockaway,
yes.
You don't have the benefit of our little clock, but I've let you go beyond your time.
I'm sorry.
That's fine. No, it's not at all a problem, but perhaps you want to think about summing up.
Okay. Mr. Palacios properly relied on regulations that we had and on hospital policy, and these are the same policies that are in effect in every coroner's office in the United States of America. Nobody allows viewing of a police case body because it would disturb the evidence, obviously. So if there's anything clearly established about this, it's that you can't do it. Mr. Palacios was well within the bounds of law and of reason, and acted reasonably in all respects. And that's all I have, unless you have questions.
I think not. Thank you.
Thank you.
You used up your time, but you've come a long way, so we're going to give you another minute or so for rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Anna. Basically, 868 gives Section 868 of restatement gives an interest in a deceased body. And in the Newman, this court recognizes that if there's an interest of entitlement under state law in a body, then that creates a property interest for purposes of 1983, because it recognizes that the property interest isn't confined to the strict sense of property itself. It goes to the sense of an interest of entitlement. And we have that under Commonwealth law by the Restatement 868, which applies and operates as a state statute. And under the comments to the code, it reaches to a person who improperly deals with a body or a person who denies his proper burial. And here, there is absolutely no valid regulation which justified giving Alice access to her son's body. The regulation, the policy they rely on, were never properly promulgated. But in extent, even if you want to view them as being appropriate, they provide a procedure for viewing. And she was not apprised of those procedures, nor did they take advantage of it to allow her to have those procedures to view. So that is an interference under 868. And finally, with respect to Officer Santos, he relies heavily on the case of Holes versus Pooler in his case. But in that case, there was even at least a warning shot fired before there was deadly force used. No such thing happened in this case. In any event, Your Honor, we feel that the exclusion of a refusal to consider Narita's declaration was improper, and the grant of summary judgment in this case must be reconsidered and reversed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. De La Cruz versus Palacios is now submitted. Thank all counsel for your argument this morning, and we're adjourned.
All rise.